AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Christopher Cruz reporting from the Washington Bureau. Punishing rainstorms are expected to continue in California for the next day or two, says CBS's Tom Foti.
Way too dry for years, way too wet now. California's been drenched by storm after storm, with yet more to come from up north to San Diego. The Weather Channel's Molly McCollum.
1 to 2 inches of rain may not seem like a lot, but on top of everything that we've seen already, this is going to cause more problems. And there are some spots that have picked up more rain in the first 14 days of January than all of last year.
President Biden's declared California a major disaster area, making it eligible for quick federal aid.
And President Biden this morning issued a disaster declaration for Autauga and Dallas counties in Alabama. Tornadoes and other severe storms hit the counties last week, killing at least 6 people. Documents with classified markings have now been found in 3 places linked to President Biden, including in his private library at his home in Delaware. University of Virginia political analyst Larry Sabato says the White House needs to get ahead of this issue.
When you have a controversy and you're getting negative publicity for it, you need to get all the information out as quickly as possible.
Former President Trump's statements during a deposition in a sexual assault case are getting a lot of scrutiny. Loyola Law School's Lori Levinson says Trump's words may come back to bite him.
Where Trump may be in trouble with his deposition is in his claim that Jean Carroll said that she enjoyed rape. Any time he misrepresented something, lied, or exaggerated, he can expect to hear questions about it on cross-examination during the defamation trial.
That trial is scheduled for April. Rescuers are digging out bodies and survivors after a Russian missile hit a large apartment building in eastern Ukraine yesterday. CBS's Deborah Patta is in the capital, Kyiv.
Russian missiles pounded the country. Hardest hit a residential apartment block in Dnipro. 2 children among the dead.
At least 20 people were killed. 40 more are missing. Tens of thousands of Israelis demonstrated in 3 major cities last night against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's judicial reform plan. They accuse him of undermining democratic rule. Protester Jacob Yosha.
We will not accept it and will fight for this democracy.
President Biden today will mark what would have been the 94th birthday of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with a Sunday sermon at Atlanta's historic Ebenezer Baptist Church. That's the church where King preached and was co-pastor from 1960 until he was assassinated in 1968. Mr. Biden will renew his call for Congress to pass sweeping voting rights legislation. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation related, and Brewing says it's badly needed as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rose says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
The SHA 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. It is Saturday, January 14th, 2023. Welcome to Morning Cannolis. This is, as always, our weekend review of those major, those important stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you so much for once again joining me this hour and hopefully next hour, too, as we discuss some of those major issues that have populated the headlines, populated the news focus here in America, and today also beyond the borders of America with respect to one story all about law, government, and justice in America. Delighted to have you with me this morning. I'm also here in the studios of WAUK Radio with my wonderful producer. His name is Kelvin, and together we're also taking your phone calls this hour and next. That number, as you know, is 844-967-2789. Once again, 844-967-2789. Always delighted to get your thoughtful comments, your insightful questions, your perspectives on the things that we talk about, sometimes the things that are not on our agenda. Welcome all of that. This is our 30th broadcast, Morning Cannolis, beginning way back in June of last year. Again, delighted to have you join me this morning, as you have in the past. Hopefully we'll continue to do so. This, a broadcast of Civic Media. It is significant along the way to say that something big is happening on Thursday, January 26th. All of the stations, the affiliated places of Civic Media, the leadership of Civic Media offering to advertisers local and statewide about $1 million in free advertising right here on WAUK and all of the other stations of Civic Media. Take a look at the website on that. Take a look at the wonderful offering being made here. Free advertising, up to $1 million, $5,000 chunks to advertisers who might be interested in becoming a part of the Civic Media family through that advertising opportunity. Today, as I said, we have, as always, an ambitious but achievable, informative, and perhaps even inspiring and engaging agenda, a good academic syllabus for us to discuss many, many things during the course of this hour and also next. Before we begin that movement through all of those important stories in law, government, and the rule of law here in America, let's do as we always do, a little bit of a look back, things that happened in history on this day, January 14th. Today, only three, at least two of them related to the law and the aspiration for justice in our nation. It was way back in 1942, January 14th, that a very reluctant but nonetheless resigned president of the United States, his name was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, signed something called the War Department's Executive Order 9066. You may not recognize that. I suspect you don't. And that's okay because it's more formally known as the Japanese Internment Directive, the executive order that authorized the physical removal of all Japanese Americans into internment camps in America. That happened today, 1942, January 14th, a blot undeniably on our American history, followed up by a decision in 1944, a couple of years later, when that was challenged by some citizens of Japanese descent, Americans of Japanese descent, a case that went to the United States Supreme Court, ultimately a case called Korematsu, decided in 1944. A majority of the Supreme Court in 1944 said that that was all right. They supported the taking, the removal, the placement of Japanese American citizens in internment camps during the course of World War II. Again, justified inappropriately on the basis that Japanese Americans, citizens of our nation, would somehow not be having allegiance to our nation. Plainly not true. That upholding of the exclusion of Japanese Americans into those internment camps stood as a law. It was criticized roundly, resolutely, and today is regarded as one of the great blots also on Supreme Court history. And indeed, in 2018, even though we'd like to think that long before that, the Supreme Court would not follow up on that kind of precedent and order the internment of any citizens of the United States based upon their heritage. We embrace heritage, right? We encourage nationality, race, all those other immutable characteristics that make us a wonderfully diverse nation. Nonetheless, in 2018, John Roberts used the opportunity of a majority opinion in a case called Trump versus Hawaii to explicitly repudiate, to send back that notion set forth in Korematsu that it is okay for the government to do what the president and the War Department did at that time. Today, we know that as the Defense Department at that time executing this Executive Order 9066, a blot on our nation's history, a blot on Supreme Court history, thankfully repudiated not too long ago, and again for many, many years academically also rejected by everyone who looked at this shortly after not only World War II, but even after the issuance of the opinion itself. That happened today, 1942. A 1981, jumping a little bit more currently, was the day that the Iran hostage crisis ended. It began in 1979. 60 people held initially, as many of you may recall, at the embassy in Tehran. 52 of them for a total of 444 days, ultimately released by the Ayatollah, just as Jimmy Carter was leaving office and Ronald Reagan was taking the presidency. It ended today, January 14th, 1981. And the other big news of the past, January 14th, it was today in 1963 that Alabama, Georgia Governor George Wallace, he was the 45th governor of the state of Alabama, was first sworn in. He would serve four terms in that major significant position in the state of Alabama. He ran many times for the presidency of the United States of America, took on Lyndon Johnson unsuccessfully. Also later on ran an independent campaign for the presidency, none of those successful. The significance of George Wallace in history, not only one of the longest serving governors in United States history, probably the third longest in all of our history. George Wallace, also a blot on our nation's history. His motto, segregation forever. He spent most of his career talking about race, identifying the people of color, people of non-white populations in America as being not entitled to all of the rights and privileges guaranteed by the Constitution and the laws of the states, the laws of the United States of America, and that all of us would embrace today. Nonetheless, elected repeatedly after 1963 into that position, and his legacy remains to this day one of racism, promoting the Jim Crow laws and otherwise encouraging people to believe that somehow people of color are not entitled to the benefits and the privileges of society in America, including education, health care, all those other things that are important to our life and livelihood. 1963, the first time that George Wallace took the oath of office in Alabama, serving then for three additional terms later on in our nation's history. Let's now turn to current history, current events in America. Let's talk a little bit about our syllabus this morning, both this hour and also next hour here on Morning Cannolis. We've got lots and lots of things to talk about. We're not going to spend a lot of time, if any, talking about what happened in Congress this past week, although we plainly could, highlighting instead some of the secondary issues, but beginning with two major issues that did, in fact, populate our newspapers and our media feeds throughout this week. One, of course, the discovery of classified documents in Joe Biden's, our president's, both his office in Washington, D.C., and also his residence in Delaware, his office that he had during the time that he was not in office, the disclosure of those discoveries actually made in late 2022, disclosures made of those just this past week. I want to talk about those classified documents, what they mean, what we know, what we don't know up to this point, and why they are significant, why it's important to understand both what we know about this case, why it is different, why it's the same, to the other investigations also being pursued, as we know well, with respect to classified documents taken from the White House by former President Trump. We're going to talk a lot about that in our first hour this morning. We're also going to talk about the other major rule of law issue from this past week, and that is the sentencing by a state court judge in New York of the Trump Corporation and its chief financial officer, a fellow we've talked about a lot on this broadcast and others here on the stations of Civic Media, a fellow named Alan Weisselberg, both of them sentenced, given criminal sentences this past week, bringing at least this portion of that investigation and prosecution to an end in Manhattan. We're going to chat somewhat about that. Again, taking your phone calls. Other things on our agenda this morning. We're going to revisit E. Jean Carroll back in the news again this past week, as you know well, and we're going to talk about it again this morning. Two lawsuits challenging the former president in his statements that he did not, in fact, assault her. Statements he made contrary to E. Jean Carroll's clear exposition, her claims that he, in fact, attempted to sexually assault her in the 1990s in a store in Manhattan. We're going to talk about a transcript that was released just this past week that gives us more insight into the dynamics of those two lawsuits that remain pending in New York. We're also going to talk about another Trump-related matter, and that is Rudy Giuliani and the subpoena that was issued to him way back in November, just disclosed this past week, again, by the Department of Justice, by the U.S. Attorney's Office in the District of Columbia. We'll talk about the focus of that subpoena issued to Rudy Giuliani, obviously a former chief officer of the Trump entities, if you will, a principal aide, a guider, an advisor to the former president. And we're going to talk about what that subpoena means and its significance when it comes to the overall investigations going on with respect to the former president. And then we're also going to chat a lot about the Proud Boys and the trial that was suspended this week for a number of different reasons, not to say that there wasn't some significant news coming out of the federal court in the District of Columbia. Those Proud Boys, again, on trial for a seditious conspiracy. We're going to talk about what happened this past week in that area. Second hour, assuming we get through all of that in the first hour, we're going to return again to the Supreme Court of the United States of America. We're going to talk about a New York guns law. We're going to talk about a particular case that was dismissed and supported by the Supreme Court that was challenging the Biden presidency. We're going to talk about some new cases taken up by the Supreme Court, 8 new cases, including an employment case. We're also going to talk along the way about a case outside of the United States of America involving the new and former president of Brazil, Bolsonaro. Continue to join us this morning for all of that right after the break here on Morning Cannolis.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Kelsey Miles.
Let the music roll.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Overcast this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 38. Southerly winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Chance for scattered showers, 34. Scattered rain showers likely tomorrow. Highs around 42, cloudy. Upper 30s Tuesday and Wednesday, with a chance for scattered showers Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 25 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
We are back. Thank you once again for staying with me. Our weekend when review of the big stories in law, government, and aspiration for justice in America. My name is Jim Santel. We're talking this morning about a number of major issues. At the top of our agenda, our syllabus this morning, the Biden documents case. Once again, the disclosure this past week that the current president had in his possession during the time that he was out of office. This is a time period after he served as the vice president under President Obama, in his office both in Washington, D.C., and also his private residence in Delaware, some classified documents. Again, plainly shades of, important to emphasize, shades of what we've seen already with respect to the former president, Donald Trump, and the documents case that is still under investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice, under Jack Smith, who's the special counsel there. Let's talk about what we know. And again, the reason for this is to identify what we do know, but also to draw some distinctions between the Trump case and what we know already about the Biden case as well. This past Thursday, Merrick Garland and the White House provided us with a little bit better sense of the timing of the disclosure, the discovery of these documents in these two locations. We know now that way back in November 2nd, Joe Biden's lawyers discovered what they described as a small number of classified documents in what was described as a locked closet in an office that Mr. Biden had used, something called the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement. It's an office established by the University of Pennsylvania and also plainly staffed by the then former vice president, now president, as a part of a think tank in Washington, D.C., a small number of classified documents found in this locked closet in that location. The following day, the National Archives, NARA, we've talked about them a lot, retrieved those materials from the closet. And the day after that, the archives referred this matter to the Department of Justice. November 14th, about 10 days after that, the attorney general selected a fellow named John Lausch, who is the U.S. attorney in Chicago. He was a Trump appointee, has remained in that office to conduct a preliminary assessment of that material, to determine what we should do about that, to make a recommendation about what should happen inside the Department of Justice. December 20th, the current president's lawyers told Mr. Lausch, the U.S. attorney in Chicago, that they had found a second set of classified documents in the garage in Joe Biden's house in Wilmington, Delaware. And that, again, according to the attorney general disclosing that this past week. The administration separately said it immediately notified the Justice Department again upon finding this additional small number of files in a storage space in a garage and a single-page document in an adjacent room. On January 5th, the U.S. attorney in Chicago advised the attorney general that a special counsel from his perspective was warranted. And on January 9th, CBS News first reported on the existence of these documents found at the Penn Biden Center just this past week. The White House acknowledging that in a statement. January 10th, the president told reporters when he was in Mexico City visiting the president there that he was surprised to learn in the fall that there were classified documents that had been taken to his former office at that think tank, but he did not disclose that additional documents had been taken. The following day, we had a report that the second batch of classified records had been found without details specifically about when and where. And that was, of course, the batch was found in the garage on December 20th. And again, on January 12th, just this past week, the White House acknowledged that documents had been found in that garage. A search of the Biden home in Rehoboth, Delaware, did not recover any further documents, the administration and the Department of Justice had said. Along the way, however, the attorney general decided, taking up the recommendation made by the U.S. Attorney Lausch out of Chicago, to appoint a special counsel to review this matter. And indeed, the attorney general did that just this past week. He appointed a fellow named Robert Hur, H-U-R. He's a former U.S. attorney in Maryland, again, coming in out of private practice now. Mr. Hur was a litigation partner at a law firm called Gibson, Dunn, and Crutcher. But before that, he had been the U.S. attorney in Maryland under the Trump administration, nominated by the former president, confirmed by the Senate, served in that capacity throughout the Trump administration. Mr. Hur, a graduate of the Stanford Law School, Harvard College, served as one of the top aides of someone who many of you will recall. Remember, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein actually was a colleague of mine during the Biden administration. He was the U.S. attorney in Maryland. Rod Rosenstein then went on to be the Deputy Attorney General. And during that term, Mr. Hur served as one of his top aides in the Deputy Attorney General's office. Hur had also previously, a long time ago, served as a law clerk for Justice Supreme Court Chief Justice William Rehnquist. So that is his background. That is his history. He plainly now serves as a bookend, if you will, to the related, but again, I'm going to offer a quite different investigation being pursued by the other special counsel, and his name is Jack Smith, also appointed by the attorney general to review what? To review the Mar-a-Lago documents that have been taken by the former president to the Mar-a-Lago location, Donald Trump taking those. A major, major difference is just this. And the reason why I went through all of this history is just this. The disclosure, the identification by these documents by the lawyers for the current president, former vice president, immediately turning them over, recognizing they shouldn't be there, recognizing this is a problem, turning them over immediately to the Department of Justice, ultimately through NARA, making that disclosure. Why is that important? It shows a recognition of the significance of the documents. It shows the notion that probably this was very sloppy, maybe even negligent and wrong to have them, but disclosure made immediately. Compare that, as we have spoken on this broadcast in great detail, to the difficulty undertaken by the NARA in getting documents back from the former President Trump. Requests made by the archives when they discover that they did not have everything that they should have. Requests made, a grand jury subpoena issued, ultimately a search warrant also to get those documents back. I'm going to talk more about that and also take at least one caller who's already calling in about this or perhaps another topic right after the break as we're here on Morning Cannolis chatting about, again, the appointment of a new special counsel just this past week in America. Stay with us.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
CBS News Brief. Federal aid is on the way for hard-hit California, says CBS's Tom Foti. With more rain threatened, President Biden's declared that a major disaster exists in California. That means an order for quick federal aid to supplement local recovery efforts as storm after storm batters the state.
Documents marked classified have been found in a third unsecured location linked to President Biden, says CBS's Bo Erickson.
This new revelation of more found classified information comes after Attorney General Merrick Garland on Thursday appointed a special counsel to investigate the president's handling of these classified documents.
Tens of thousands of people protested in three major Israeli cities yesterday against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's judicial reform plan, among them Asaf Steinberg.
This can be the start of the end of the Jewish state as we know it.
The protesters say they fear the proposal will further damage the country's already fragile democracy. CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
As a Walgreens pharmacist, I talk with people all the time about little tips and tricks for filling their Medicare prescriptions, like taking advantage of Walgreens 90-day refills to save them a trip, or using Refill by Scan, which is super easy and right on your phone. And for anybody worried about prescription costs, I say, hey, we got you, with low-cost copays on many medications.
Let's talk about making things easier. Walgreens is here. Fill your way and save at walgreens.com/Medicare. See pharmacists for restrictions and exclusions.
Did you know you can get your prescriptions for less at your local pharmacy? You can with GoodRx. It's the free app that can save you money on your medications. Just search for your prescription, choose the pharmacy and the price that works best for you, and then show your GoodRx coupon to your pharmacist at the drop-off counter. GoodRx works at over 70,000 pharmacies, including Walmart, Rite Aid, and Walgreens, and it works whether you have insurance or not. It's easy to save. Next time you drop off your prescription, check GoodRx. To start saving today, go to GoodRx.com. GoodRx is not insurance.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show, and we are now on the air in Waukesha, live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
Only life had a remote control. You could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Welcome back to Morning Cannolis. We are talking this morning, January 14th, about one of the major news stories of this past week, the discovery. The disclosure that the current president, formerly vice president, had in his possession both at his home in Delaware and also in his now former office in Washington, D.C., some classified documents, beginning to do some analysis of that. And we begin, as I indicated right before the break, with the fundamental notion that no one is above the law. No one is above the law. The attorney general's right to open up a new file on this, to direct that investigation be undertaken, because we don't know whether or not there was a criminal intent here, a criminal case here can be made. I'm going to talk about that in just a moment or so. So very important for everyone to understand, Republicans, Democrats, everyone in between, independents, no one is above the law. We always say that. and appropriate to investigate to find out what the facts are. What do we want to find out? The same kinds of things, treating this matter the same in many ways as one would start at least treating the Trump matter. What are these documents? How many of them? Plainly, many fewer than involved in the Trump matter. Thousands of documents there, at least 100 of them classified. Here you've got a much less voluminous number of documents. You want to figure out what those documents said. Presumably, fairly easy to determine, looking at their substance. And most importantly, you want to figure out how they got there, right? How did they end up there? Pure negligence? Was this inadvertent, as it certainly suggests that it was already? Or was this intentional? Was there some purpose in taking the documents, putting them where they were? The same questions get asked in the same equitable treatment of anyone who might be under investigation. And I say that at the outset just because it's important to establish, again, as this president, as this attorney general has said, no one above the law. And the investigation now goes forward to determine that all-important issue of intent. And again, as we have spoken on so many occasions on this broadcast and others, that's the linchpin of every single criminal investigation. Bad things happen in America. Bad things happen in life. Sometimes those are catastrophic. In order for a criminal prosecution to take hold, to have some vitality, in order for a grand jury to return an indictment, for prosecutors, state prosecutors, federal prosecutors to return charges, you have to have established intent, purpose, knowledge. I intended to engage in this criminal conduct, and absent that, you don't have a case. And so that will certainly be the focus of Jack Smith's continuing inquiry. It already is the focus, to be sure, to figure out what Donald Trump meant, what he intended when he took those documents. How is he using them? And what kinds of things, what are the indicia that intent may have been there? The case in that instance involving the former president plainly involves, as I said before the break, these numerous attempts to try to get those documents back. And why is that significant? And why is it different from the Biden matter? Repeated attempts providing notice, right? Providing information, providing advice, if you will, to the former president that you shouldn't have these documents. We need them back. And when you refuse or for whatever reason decline to produce them in response to requests, in response to a grand jury, a subpoena, finally producing them in the wake of a search warrant and still not having everything, the intent is perhaps clearer than it would be if you simply discover them and turn them over right away, which is much closer, as far as we know, to the Biden circumstance. And so we will see what these two special counsels, looking at the same kind of thing generically, but approaching this plainly on a very, very different factual predicate, different kinds of cases, important for us to understand, even though we do not have all the facts yet on the Biden matter, we do not have all the facts on the Trump matter either. But it is perhaps too early to say what will happen. My own sense is highly unlikely that there is a viable criminal prosecution with respect to Joe Biden and the discovery of these documents in his former office, in his home. Why? Again, because discovery and turnover suggests a recognition and a lack of intent to take them and to keep them, a discovery that this was a mistake. We don't in America charge people for criminal conduct based upon negligence. That's a civil matter. And so we'll talk more about that plainly, much in the news this past week, much more coming out, and we will see what happens coming out of the Department of Justice. Jack Smith on the one hand, and then also Robert Hurd on the other, two special counsels looking at whether or not the acquisition, the taking the possession of these documents by a former president and now our current president, while he was the vice president and right after that, whether there was any criminal exposure there, no one above the law. We've got on the line Dick. Dick, appreciate your calling in this morning. Thanks for being a part of our show this morning.
Couple questions. Is there an assistant attorney general besides Merrick Garland?
Yes, there are actually many assistant attorneys general.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
And the reason I ask the question is because let's say that Jack Smith, and then I got one about the other special counsel, right. Let's say he comes with just the mother load. I mean, a slam dunk on Trump. I'm afraid that Merrick Garland will want to pass the ball, or maybe should, because he seems like that's all he can do, in my mind, is pass the ball to somebody else, saying it's too political, when, duh, anything about a former president being indicted and maybe going to trial would be political. But secondly, is it Heard or her?
Heard, right, exactly, right.
What do you, before you say I'm a conspiracy theorist, you remember what Trump did with the Attorney General in the state of Georgia and with President Zelensky? What do you think the over and under is that this clown will try and make contact with Mr. Heard?
Right.
I'm talking about Trump.
Right, sure. To the new special counsel, Robert Hur, exactly. We don't know. We don't know. But plainly, this president, the former president, that is out there already, Dick, as you've just said, commenting not only, even this past week, on Jack Smith, suggesting that his investigation is inappropriate, not just ill-timed, but unsubstantiated. And now, of course, indicating that Robert Hur and the special counsel investigation that he is pursuing should, in fact, be pursued actively, and that this is a crime. And so who knows what our former president will do. We certainly hope that he will not attempt to do anything to affect that investigation. My strong guess is Robert Hur appreciates that he doesn't take any phone calls, doesn't take any communications from anyone who is the subject or a target of the investigation. Same with Jack Smith. Should not be hearing from and should not have any contact with Donald Trump. May eventually want to offer those folks opportunities to discuss what they know. But again, basic fundamental attendance there. To respond to your earlier issue about the Attorney General himself, the Attorney General does have a Deputy Attorney General. Her name is Lisa Monaco. She is plainly second in command there. There are many assistant attorneys general as well, and they are in charge of things like the Criminal Division, the National Security Division, the Antitrust Division, the Environmental and Natural Resources Division, the Tax Division, all of them responsible for various areas, the Civil Division as well, all of them responsible for particular assignments given the United States Department of Justice. All of those people eventually are responsible to and are supervised by the Attorney General. Ultimately, and I think, Dick, this is implicit in your concern about Merrick Garland, whether it is a recommendation from Jack Smith, a recommendation from Robert Hur in these two separate, but again, rule of law related cases, ultimately, it is the Attorney General himself, who will have to make the decision about charges. And even if their assistant attorneys general, even if Lisa Monaco as the deputy makes recommendations, they are just that. Ultimately, it is the Attorney General who makes the determination on all of these cases. And so to that point, as I've said in other settings on this broadcast and others, this notion that the special counsel are truly independent and have a completely independent prerogative and judgment base, they do. They can pursue this, but ultimately their decision is not only subject to, but has to be made by the Attorney General. And they will be making recommendations to the Attorney General and perhaps other assistant attorneys general about what should happen here. Ultimately, it is still comes back to Merrick Garland. And so this notion that somehow there is a completely independent Department of Justice led by these two special counsels, that is not accurate as a practical matter. And again, as a part of our civics education here, as we do every Saturday morning, that important to know as well. Dick, very much appreciate the comment and the question about all of this. Also getting into a little structure related to the Department of Justice. Important to know, important to understand as we try to figure out what's going on here. Again, no one above the law. Rule of law applies to everyone. And that plainly is what the Attorney General has said, including other assistant attorneys general and the deputy as well. Bill from Oconomowoc, you're also calling in this morning. Glad to have you with us this morning, Bill.
Thank you very much for the job you do. You're quite an educator. I've got something to share, two things to share with you. One is I think the greatest thing that ever happened was Biden having to turn in these documents. It's going to set the bar for honesty, integrity,
sure,
the whole nine yards of carrying the office of president. One is going to mirror what, okay, it happened, but he dealt with it. The other one is running from it, denying it, right, lying about right, it, stonewalling. And last but not least, you know, the Trump people say, oh, you've always been out to get Trump. I never wanted that man to even run for president. If you looked at his personal resume from the 11 bankruptcies, the failed, what's going on in Scotland, and then the alleged, not charged, 26 sexual assaults, do you want a man like that to even be president? Of course people didn't want him in office.
Right.
It stands to reason. He lacks integrity, he lacks honesty, and he can't comprehend diplomacy. So thanks so much for what you do, and have a great day.
Bill, appreciate the comment very much. We're actually going to feed that thought a little bit more in our next story. We're going to talk more about the problems that the former President Donald Trump is facing, both in the criminal arena, but also in the civil arena. Some of his senior aides, like Rudy Giuliani, other things out there in the coming minutes here this morning. But as to your very first point, hugely important to make that point, Bill. I appreciate the comment that intent and determination about whether or not there's a criminal case is all based upon an assessment of conduct, right? If I discover that I have something in my possession that I shouldn't have, and I immediately run to the authorities and say, I shouldn't have this, it certainly suggests that I did not have the intent, the criminal intent, that I made a mistake, right? And you're absolutely right from my perspective, and I think the perspective of everybody looking at this, most people, perhaps not everyone, but most rational, reasonable people looking at this saying, you know what? Discovery is made. Honesty, integrity, Bill, exactly as you described it, says that this is what you do. And not only because that will also show that you don't have the criminal intent to have taken these documents in the first place, to keep them, to use them for some nefarious purpose, but beyond that, and Bill, I think this is right at the core of what you're saying, it is the right thing to do, right? And we expect our presidents to be upright with us. When bad things happen, we want them to tell us about those things. We want them to tell us about the things that they themselves have done. And that makes us trust them more when it comes to the difficult things and, yes, even the easy things that are out there for us to understand. So great comments. Bill, appreciate that very much. Dick as well, your comments this morning about this. We will continue to monitor this as well. We also have another major, major issue coming right off of Bill's comment about the integrity and the background, if you will, the history of Donald Trump. And Bill, obviously, opposed not only to his first election as president, but also any future opportunity. We know the former president has announced that he is a candidate in 2024 to resume the presidency in the White House. This past week, another major story, this one coming out of New York. We recall that not too long ago, the Trump Corporation and its chief financial officer both found criminally guilty, felony tax fraud counts and other financial charges in the Manhattan State Court, a New York charge brought by Alvin Bragg, who is the district attorney for Manhattan. Alvin Bragg, again, responsible, taking over from the prior the district attorney in Manhattan. This past week, former President Donald Trump's family real estate business, the Trump Corporation, ordered just yesterday to pay a $1.6 million criminal penalty based upon its prior conviction in this felony tax fraud case. Also, we know just this past week that Alan Weisberg, this chief financial officer, sentenced to 5 months in prison. He's going to Rikers Island, the jail complex there in New York. We're going to talk more about the reason why that is also a major story in the rule of law this week. We're going to talk more about that when we come back. Stay with us to chat about this and other issues.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Dana Perry.
What am I fearing? Why do I worry at all?
can feel it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
I love this song.
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
What grows in the forest? Our imagination and our family bonds. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Highs around 38 this afternoon. Under cloudy skies, southerly winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy tonight. Chance for scattered showers. Lows dip down to about 34. Scattered rain showers again tomorrow. Highs around 42. Overcast skies. Upper 30s Tuesday and Wednesday with a chance for scattered showers Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 25 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
We are back, and we are talking in these final moments of our first segment here at Morning Cannolis about this very significant sentence imposed on the Trump company and also upon its CFO, Alan Weisberg, by a Manhattan judge. His name is Juan Merchan, M-E-R-C-H-A-N, just this past week. Again, a $1.6 million criminal penalty and 5 months in state prison for Alan Weisberg as a result of this criminal prosecution, resulting in a criminal conviction back in December, basically for doling out off-the-books perks to some of the top executives, engaging in tax fraud under New York state law. Significantly, the District Attorney Alvin Bragg called for, in a statement, for the state to change the law so that we can impose, as he said, more significant penalties and sanctions on corporations that commit crimes in New York. Plainly responding there to an awful lot of the response out there that says, gosh, $1.6 million, probably a drop in the bucket. Sounds a lot like a lot of money to me, and I suspect to most, if not all of you as well. But $1.6 million in this multi-million, if not billion-dollar set of companies and corporations that are the Trump entities. And Alvin Bragg recognizing that. The judge, Judge Merchan, saying as well that the evidence compelled him to impose this penalty. That is the maximum, the highest amount he could impose. Plainly, you can't jail, you can't imprison a corporation. You can do so with a chief financial officer, and Alan Weisberg, who testified in that trial on behalf of the prosecution, now going to prison for his involvement. What is the other significance of this? The question, of course, is what about Donald Trump himself? Following up on our good callers just before the break, it is clear that this matter has been focusing not only upon the corporation, but on the players themselves. And reasonably clear that Mr. Bragg's prosecutors continue to scrutinize all of these activities to determine what the former president's role, what Donald Trump's role was in the payment of these kinds of perks, these tax fraud engagements, and specifically an awful lot of information to suggest that the DA's office there is still looking at this role of the former president in this hush money paid to a porn star who said she had an affair with the now former president. Again, that according to people who are somewhat familiar with this matter. Also conducting, presumably, a broader examination of Mr. Trump's business practices of the past, maybe of the present as well, and whether he fraudulently inflated the value of certain assets. And in that connection, also important to note, not just as a footnote, but as an important thing to understand that, again, also in New York, Donald Trump is facing the civil litigation brought by the state attorney general, not the DA, the state attorney general. Her name, again, Letitia James. She is seeking $250 million against Trump companies, seeking to bar the Trumps, including Donald and his children, from ever serving on boards again, based upon their improper, their illegal, their inconsistent valuation of properties. So she's also looking at valuation issues financial issues, monetary issues, as a part of the civil litigation going on there. The president, former president, having already provided a deposition testimony compelled by the court that's overseeing that civil case. That case, again, not yet going to judgment, probably no time soon, but nonetheless proceeding apace under the litigation prerogative and also the push of the attorney general there in the state of New York. Again, many other things. We're going to talk about even more of that, more other civil matters involving the former president in just a moment or so. But again, those two big news stories coming out of just this past week, classified documents and Trump sentencings in Manhattan. Before we got into those other stories, let's take another caller from Joe in Madison. Joe, thrilled to have you back with us again this morning. Your comment or question about this or other matters that are highlighting our news in America.
Thank you so much for all of this information. I think that the issue of intent is a very interesting one, and you alluded to in one of the previous segments the differences between classified documents, Biden classified documents, Trump. And I think it's a really interesting point, not only to talk about intention, but also to talk about a calendar or timeline, if you will. So as I understand it, upon being notified that there were documents discovered, the Biden legal team, after being told by the National Archives, you guys have some stuff here, go look for them, returned them. And I'm curious if we have a less kind of a length of time or a timeline or a calendar to contrast Biden's okay, you need them, you want them back, whoops, here you go, as compared to, as you described, the Trump administration, ex-Trump, President Trump, told to give them back, said no again, which forced the grand jury, which forced the search warrant, and as I understand it, he's still stonewalling on particular documents that have not been returned. What's the length of time that we've been dealing with Trump saying no, 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 as compared to length of time with a Biden? Do you have a sense of that? Can you relate that?
Absolutely. Great question, because, again, it goes to what is the purpose here? Why, you know, again, as I said before, this notion that how you behave when you discover something that you may have done that's wrong with a small w, how you respond to that speaks all to intent, Joe, as you just indicated, right? So we know that very shortly after President Trump left office, the archives began to look around and say, gee, we're missing things, right? We don't have things that normally would be a part of the presidential archives. And they begin to make first requests. And that's when we get this first box of documents. And Donald Trump does provide some things. And it's in that first batch of documents, plainly not complete, that the NARA and the archives identify some classified materials. And they say that's problematic. And more than that, we still don't have everything. And so, Joe, you've got it just right. In the months that follow, then, after those requests are made, further requests made through NARA, ultimately referred to the Department of Justice, requests made by prosecutors to return these documents, letters made to the issued to the attorneys, and then ultimately going to the grand jury, asking for this grand jury subpoena months later. Ultimately, when still there's not full compliance, going to get a search warrant from the magistrate judge in South Florida, going in with a compelled review and search and seizure of documents there. And again, as you said, even in the wake of that, in the midst of that, representations by attorneys for Donald Trump that you've got everything. And it turns out that those are not true as well. Again, you wonder out loud, and it does go to intent and the purpose, why it is, if you've been provided with notice so early on, a year ago, more than a year since you've been out of office, why do you still have documents? Why don't you do this scouring, as plainly the Biden folks did, and determine whether or not you've got anything more? Contrast that, Joe, as you invited, to what I did earlier, which is to review the timetable, which is very, very short. Between November 2nd, when they first discover these documents, November 3rd, National Archives has them. We make referrals again to John Lausch. And then once again, in late December, December 20th, there's a second set of materials. Those are produced within days, maybe a week or so afterwards. Again, we recognize we shouldn't have these documents. We turn them over. It speaks hugely, hugely to the intent issue. Appreciate the phone call and the opportunity to discuss that. Very good point, Joe. We'll talk more about that and other matters as we go into our second hour here in our review of Justice in America.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Warning, listening to the Devil's Advocates may expose you to opposing views.
It's scary. Maybe I'm coming a little bit more over the left, but...
Well, it's not left, it's good governance, Steve.
It's good to be exposed to different ideas, and I do appreciate that you do put that out there in the airways, because a lot of time where you just get a little soundbite of this or a little bit of that, and that's the end of it. You're to be commended for that.
Dave, I'm glad you finally come around to commending the greatest radio show ever, man.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming.